It's 10 years since the release of the internationally acclaimed scientist Tim Flannery's landmark book on climate change called The Weathermakers. The politics around the issue still isn't settled, but the science is pretty much in that decade. Thousands of scientific reports and assessments over the past decade adding to our understanding of how the climate reacts to carbon pollution. Ahead of the Paris International Summit in December, which will once again aim to reach a global consensus on how deeply to cut carbon emissions post-2020, Tim Flannery has come up with another book called, very optimistically, Atmosphere of Hope, Searching for Solutions to the Climate Crisis. Tim Flannery, welcome to breakfast.
Thanks very much, Fran.
Tim, in this book, you seem to have gone from pessimist to optimist, that the world can arrest the threat of damaging climate change. What's given you this cause for hope?
Well, I must admit that if I'd written the book 12 months ago, I might have had a different title. But a lot has happened in the last 12 months to give me hope. The first is that we've seen, for the first time ever, emissions from the burning of greenhouse gases start to level off at the same time the economy's grown. Now, they're only preliminary figures, but they give us huge hope because for the last decade, we've been on a worst-case scenario trajectory of emissions growth, up to now 40 billion tonnes of greenhouse gases a year going into the atmosphere. So that flattening of the curve is one thing. The other thing is this realisation that there's a whole basket of technologies out there that we're not using yet or even thinking about yet. In fact, I had to give a name to them in the book, called them the third way. And those technologies represent ways of strengthening Earth's capacity to draw the greenhouse gases out of the air, or using artificial means, chemical means and so forth, to do the same thing and storing the gas safely. And after a fairly careful study, I realised that we could probably, you know, in 35 years' time, be drawing perhaps as much as 4 billion tonnes of greenhouse gases a year out of the atmosphere using those technologies.
I want to talk about those technologies, but before I come to them, as I say, it's called the Atmosphere of Hope, but you do still say at the end of your introduction, even if by some miracle we reduce emissions fast enough to preserve our climate safety. So you're still talking miracles. Is that what's required?
I think to be realistic about it, I don't think we're going to be able to stop the emissions, cut back the use of fossil fuels fast enough to stay within a 2-degree guardrail.
You don't think we will
safety.
Be able to?
I don't think we'll be able to, no.
Well,
sadly.
That's pretty dire then. I mean, we've seen the forecast of what happens if we don't make that.
That's right. But these technologies, the third way, offers us an opportunity to pull back from the brink. And those technologies are very immature at the moment. They're a bit in the space that solar and wind were in the 1970s. But 30 years from now, they may be offering us a very useful way of pulling down greenhouse gases at scale from the atmosphere and therefore pulling back from that danger point.
Okay, let's talk about those. And it seems to me you've come across them because of something that was prompted by the Weathermakers. Richard Branson was sort of intrigued, excited or stimulated, challenged really by the Weathermakers. And he set up a challenge for people to come up with new ideas. These third way new ideas include rocks, seaweed, trees, charcoal, roofs, something called olivine, I'm not sure, cement, even statues. Tell us about some of the most interesting or exciting ideas that you have come across.
Well, they keep on changing. I mean, only 2 days ago, there was a fabulous announcement made that people had worked out how to make carbon fibres, which are increasingly used in aircraft and so forth, from CO2 in the atmosphere, and at one-tenth the cost of standard conventional production methods. So we're never going to pull down a vast volume of CO2 from the atmosphere making carbon fibres, but it's one technology that's going to help.
And just to sidetrack on that for a second, segue on that, that's a notion of a positive market mechanism that is going to be profitable, rewarding, and help the planet.
Absolutely. So the focus needs to be on developing that basket of technologies, understanding them first with R&D, and developing those with which have the greatest capacity for scale. Because a billion tonnes of carbon, which is the Virgin Earth Challenge, you know, objective, is huge. I mean, to do it with tree planting, you'd need to plant the whole of the continent of Australia with forests and maintain it for a 50-year period. So that's an earth-changing number. So, you know, there's a whole series of technologies, all of which are going to produce a little bit of that, getting us up, I hope, to, you know, 4 gigatons of carbon, or that's the equivalent of 11 gigatons of
CO2. Well, give us some more examples.
Olivine is a great one. It's a rock that's produced from deep in the mantle of the Earth. If you crush up olivine or any of the rocks related to olivine and lay them on a beach, they'll just quietly absorb CO2 out of the atmosphere and store it safely.
How much landmass would you need to spread with olivine, though, to be effective?
Well, to get a gigaton of carbon out of the atmosphere, very, very big number, you'd need about 5 gigatons of olivine. So it's a lot of rock that you've got to dig up and crush up and lay on beaches and so forth. So at scale, it's still unimaginable to us, but it's one of those issues. And it's interesting looking at companies who understand olivine. There's a roofing company in the Netherlands that wants to put olivine on roofs in their roof paint. So that would help things. There's another company that wants to build monumental mounds out of it, or playgrounds and so forth, rather than using standard sand. So all of those options, they're only small bits, but add up at a global level to something significant, particularly if we think about it in 2050 terms, so 35 years from now.
Seaweed too, as I think, is another one that you're particularly interested in?
Well, seaweed is one of those ones that is least understood, but with the greatest potential. There's a desktop study being done which says that if we were to raise seaweed over 9% of the ocean surface, we would draw down an equivalent to all of the emissions we're putting up at the moment. Now, you know, when you think about, well, how do we process that seaweed into something useful? Where do we store the CO2 that comes from it? They're very big questions, but the opportunity is there.
It's 28 past eight. We're speaking with scientist Tim Flannery about his new book, Atmosphere of Hope. So the third way is all about ways to absorb the CO2 from the atmosphere to help protect us. But it does nothing, of course, for curbing our carbon emissions that have entered into the atmosphere. Is that still where we need to be focusing, though? We're having the debate at the moment in Australia about our emissions forecast post-2020. This is what the Paris talks will be focused on.
That's right. Look, we need to be doing two things at once. One is slamming down on the burning of fossil fuels as hard as we can. And the second is investing in these new technologies so that in 30 years when we are going to desperately need them, they'll be ready. It's a bit like wind and solar in the 70s that needs the investment now to grow. And if you think about solar, I mean, production costs have dropped 10% a year for 30 years. It's only in the last couple of years they got cheap enough to be competitive on the market in their own right.
But Tim, environmental activists often say, oh yeah, talking about things like, you know, carbon capture and storage, clean coal, all that, it's just really a distraction. It's just really an excuse for people not to be working harder on curbing emissions themselves.
Look, I
agree. Is the third way the same?
No, it's not. It's not. I agree about conventional carbon capture and storage, but we need to broaden our thinking about carbon capture and storage. Where else can we store carbon except from, you know, taking it out of the tailpipe of a coal-fired power plant and putting it in the ground? There are many other options for carbon capture and storage, natural options, and some really exciting ones that we might venture in on eventually, such as storing CO2 in the Antarctic ice cap. It's a proposition that's out there at the moment. So, you know, we need to broaden our thinking. We need to grasp new tools as they come up because we are losing the battle as we are. We need to do two things at once. Get those emissions down and start getting the gas out of the air.
And in terms of getting those emissions down, you've got a whole chapter in the book about coal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen reports suggesting that coal, the price of coal's, of course, fallen dramatically. And the companies who in coal mines have had massive profit drops. Yesterday, we were speaking to a new economist, Warwick McKibben. He's done some modelling for the government about targets and the impact of targets on our economy, which is really kind of the pointy end of this debate in Australia at the moment. But Warwick McKibben did make one point. He suggested, for instance, that if we're really looking at a global solution to climate change, then rather than just saying, you know, coal is bad, solar is good, we would look at the fact that Australia's coal is perhaps the cleanest burning coal in the world. We would really be talking about other countries shutting down their coal mines and maybe focusing on other technologies, Australia being the coal producer because we've got the cleanest coal. You know, are those sorts of discussions useful?
I think there's an even more useful discussion to be had, which is looking at the price of coal. So metallurgical coal in China, the highest grade coal we have, is cheaper than potable water in China now. So when it's so cheap, how do we dig it out as a profit and send a bulk product like that to China at a profit? It's just not happening.
So how do you describe the future for coal?
I think coal is on the way out at the moment. The price has dropped because no one wants the stuff. Solar and wind are cheaper. Battery storage is on its way. We're in the middle of a transition now that we'll see those fossil fuels out the door on a cost basis.
And this debate that we keep getting stuck at as a choice between, you know, jobs and the environment, what's your response to that? What's your contribution to that?
Jobs are like some sort of obscure ceremony. When we mention them, no one really knows exactly what they are. But the economy is always changing. You know, it's always changing. There are opportunities to create jobs in the third way technologies that, you know, 20 to 30 years from now will make the clean tech boom look small. So, you know, the economy is always changing. We need to find ways to create jobs, but don't use it as an excuse to hold us back from technological change and the changes that are going to come as our economy grows and develops.
Tim Flannery, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Professor Tim Flannery, scientist, author, head of the Climate Institute, is that what we call your
Climate
group now?
Council.
The Climate Council, sorry. His new book is called Atmosphere of Hope, Searching for Solutions to the Climate Crisis. It's released by Text Publishing today. And if you're listening in Melbourne, you can get along to the book launch tonight at the Basement Theatre at the University of Melbourne.